the King of Heaven, who is responsible for supplying water. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a devotee of Krishna has strong and firm faith in the understanding that if he is simply engaged in Krishna consciousness and Krishna's transcendental loving service, then he is freed from all other obligations. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna doesn't have to perform any of the ritualistic functions enjoined in the Vedas, nor is he required to worship any demigods. Being a devotee of Lord Krishna, one is surrendered to have performed all kinds of, one is understood to have performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and all kinds of worship to the demigods. One does not develop devotional service. One does not develop devotional service for Krishna by performing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of worshiping the demigods. But it should be understood that one who is fully engaged in the service of the Lord has already filled all Vedic injunctions. So we all know that the demigods are jiva souls, just like us, but more elevated. There are 400,000 different human species, and many of these species, the sophisticated ones, are living on other planets. And the demigods are a very special breed, you can say, of human beings. They have been empowered by Krishna to manage the affairs of the universe. So it's nothing mystical or, concocted or difficult to understand. Especially from our Judeo-Christian background, we get very critical of people who worship many gods, but the fact is, there are living beings who deserve our respect, but ultimately, there is only Krishna. In order to stop all such activities by his devotees, Krishna wanted to firmly establish exclusive devotional service during his presence in Vrindavan. Because he is the omniscient personality of Godhead, Krishna knew that the coward men were preparing for the Indra sacrifice, but as a matter of etiquette, he began to inquire with great honor and submission from elder personalities like Maharaj Nanda. So Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He's Parameshwar, the supreme controller. He's the original being, Adi Purusha, the original enjoyer. And yet when he comes here, he acts according to etiquette and offers respect. And of course he took a guru, Kula Guru, or Sandipani Muni, and performed menial service with his brother, Balaram, Sunanda, and, Sudama. Krishna asked his father, "My dear father, what is this arrangement going on for a great sacrifice? What is the result of such a sacrifice? And for whom is it meant? How is it performed? Will you kindly let me know? I'm very eager to know this procedure. So please explain to me the purpose of this sacrifice." So these are questions which we can also ask, or should have asked, or people should ask while growing up, because there is a great deal of ritualism under the banner of religion all over the world. And people just basically accept it because their father and father's father and father's father's father did it, so they just follow. But we should ask, what is it meant for? How is it performed? What is the purpose? So please explain to me the purpose of this sacrifice. Upon this inquiry, his father, Nanda Maharaj, remained silent, thinking that his young boy would not be able to understand the intricacies of performing the yajna. Krishna, however, persisted, "My dear father, for those who are liberal and saintly, there is no secrecy. They do not think anyone to be a friend, an enemy, or a neutral party because they are always open to everyone. And even for those who are not so liberal, nothing should be kept secret from the family members and friends, although secrecy may be maintained for persons who are inimical. Therefore, you cannot keep any secrets from me." Now this is also, there's so much, this Krishna book is a wonderful summary study of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And there's so much knowledge. Of course, it's a paraphrasing of what is already there in the Bhagavatam, but it's put in a very nice format. People tend to be duplicitous with one another, and they cheat and lie to exploit one another. I have a very personal example of my brother who went on a journey, and he was telling everyone in the family that he was going to Tulane in New Orleans to finish his PhD. Actually, he went somewhere else to meet someone he met on the internet. But he didn't want to tell anyone. He wanted to tell them he went to Tulane University and he was working on his PhD. So he's lying. So to make himself feel better, he told me the truth. He said, "Don't tell anyone, but I'm just telling you." But he knew he was lying and he knew it was bad. But, you know, he had his desires for sense gratification and this made him lie. But devotees are kutinati. There's no duplicity amongst devotees. We have nothing to hide. No need for diplomacy or lies or... We speak the truth and we try to become purified. We don't think anyone to be a friend or an enemy or a neutral party. And even those who are not so liberal, okay. "Therefore, you cannot keep any secrets from me. All persons are engaged in fruitive activities. Some know what these activities are, and they know the result. And some execute activities without knowing the purpose or the result. A person who acts with full knowledge gets the full result. One who acts without knowledge does not get such a perfect result. Therefore, please let me know the purpose of the sacrifice you are going to perform. Is it according to Vedic injunction, or is it simply a popular ceremony? Kindly let me know in detail about the sacrifice." On hearing this inquiry from Krishna, Maharaj Nanda replied, "My dear boy, this ceremonial performance is more or less traditional. Because rainfall is due to the mercy of King Indra, and the clouds are his representatives, and because water is so important for our living, we must show some gratitude to the controller of this rainfall, Maharaj Indra." This is a very important point, and it's something that we have to meditate upon. Krishna says that Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad ana sambhava yagyad bhavati parjanya samudbhava. What's that? Yagya karma samudbhava. We subsist on food grains. Everybody depends, the whole world depends upon food grains. And even the meat eaters depend upon food grains. Why?
Because
because the animals eat food grains, and you can't fatten the animals unless you have food grains. So everybody depends upon food grains. And you can't grow food grains in your factory. You need water to grow them in the ground. So if there is no rain, we're in difficulty. So rain can only be induced by living in Vancouver. Other places too, London too. Lots of rain, or Africa, or the rainforest. I think there's rain in the rainforest. It's interesting, Prabhupada said one time, a devotee was saying that, Prabhupada, there's no plants here in the desert because it doesn't rain here. Prabhupada said, no, it doesn't rain here because there are no plants. Go figure. It doesn't rain here because there are no plants. So, it's actually the right reasoning. Somebody started planting trees, etc., in the desert. Well, there's a chance, a good chance, that Krishna would shower rain. Anyway, that's the right thinking. We are arranging, therefore, to pacify King Indra because he has very kindly sent us clouds to pour down a sufficient quantity of rain for successful agricultural activities. Water is very important. Without water, we cannot farm or produce grain. And without grain, we cannot live. Therefore, rain is necessary for successful religious ceremonies. Economic development and ultimately liberation. What does this mean? Religious ceremonies, economic development, liberation. What's this called? Purusharthas, yes. Or Pancha Purushartha. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and Bhakti. People perform religious ceremonies basically so they can have economic development. It's not because they want to immediately go back to Godhead. They want immediate liberation. That comes after they're frustrated with their economic development and karma, their sense gratification. When they're fully frustrated, then they think, let me become equal to God. They want the highest sense gratification. But these are activities, they're purushartha. Activities of a man in human society. Therefore, rain is necessary for successful religious ceremonies. So we should not give up this traditional ceremonial function. If one gives it up, being influenced by lust, greed, or fear, then it does not look good, very good for him. This is Nanda Maharaj. After hearing this, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the presence of his father and all the elder coward men of Vrindavan, spoke in such a way to make heavenly King Indra very angry. He suggested that they forego the sacrifice. His reasons for discouraging the sacrifice performed to please Indra were twofold. First, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there's no need to worship the demigods for any material advancement. All results derived from worshiping the demigods are simply temporary, and only those who are less intelligent are interested in temporary results. Who knows that verse? Antavattu phalam tesham tadbhavati alpamedasam. The phal is temporary. Antavak. And people who work use their human form of life to gain anything that will have a very limited and short result. They're alpa medasam. Medasam refers to the brain tissue, brain substance. And alpa means less or no. Alpa medasam. All results derived from worshipping the demigods are simply temporary, and only those who are less intelligent are interested in temporary results. Second, whatever temporary result one derives from worshipping the demigods is actually granted by the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayaiva vihitan hitan. Whatever benefit is supposed to be derived from the demigods is actually bestowed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mayaiva. Without the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot bestow any benefit upon others. But sometimes the demigods become puffed up by the influence of material nature, thinking themselves all in all. They forget the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in Srimad Bhagavatam is clearly stated that in this instance, Krishna wanted to make King Indra angry. So sometimes it is a fact that we forget the ultimate benefactor. We think that we are the doers. Those who are a little more pious worship demigods and think that we get results by the blessings of the demigod. But those who are in knowledge know that the demigods have no power. They're simply agents. They're simply a go-between. They're doing Krishna's work. But if we please Krishna, if you pour water on the roots of the tree, then all the leaves and branches are nourished. Krishna's advent was especially meant for the annihilation of the demons and protection of the devotees. King Indra was certainly a devotee, not a demon, but because he was puffed up, Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson. He first made Indra angry by stopping the Indra Puja, which had been arranged by the coward men in Vrindavan. King Indra is the king of all the demigods. He has tremendous opulence, he gets tremendous worship, and very often, well, not very often, but many times we'll see he gets himself into trouble too. There are many examples of Indra. Either he ignored his guru one time, Brihaspati, and he was cursed for that, and
he stole a horse.
Oh yes, when Prithu Maharaj was doing his horse sacrifices and he was becoming very powerful, Indra gets envious. He doesn't want anybody to take his position.
Ran away with him. He kidnapped the wife of a rishi.
Yeah,
he did. Trouble.
Yeah, and he actually, who was it in the Ramayana? There's one story related by Vishwamitra to Lord Ramchandra. They came across a hermitage. They were going to the kingdom of Mithila, Janak Maharaj, Ramas, to be married to Sita. But on the way, they came past this ashram of Muni Bhardwaj. Bhardwaj's ashram, I believe. And his consort, his Dharampatni, had, they were performing great austerities, and Indra developed an attraction for this woman. So he appeared before her in her cottage while her husband was gone and said, took the form of her husband and pretended to be her husband and exclaimed that he was feeling lusty feelings and emergent, immediately needed to cohabit with her. She could tell it wasn't her husband, but she liked Indra. He was an attractive demigod, so she cohabited with him. And then, as he was leaving the hermitage, Bhrigu returned, cursed his wife too, and she became dust in the same place. And when she was touched by the lotus feet of Lord Ram, many years later she returned. But Indra, he became, what happened to him? He got a body with 1,000 vaginas all over him. And then he prayed and prayed. And I begged forgiveness. And I think those vaginas were turned into peacock mouths, or I mean, peacock faces. I forget exactly. Peacock eyes, yeah. I think that's what it was. Anyway, it's an interesting story. Indra always gets in trouble. So Krishna's going to make him angry here. With this purpose in mind, Krishna began to talk as if he were an atheist, supporting the philosophy of karma mimamsa. Advocates of this philosophy do not accept the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. There are sat darshan, or six kinds of Vedic philosophy. Vedanta is one of them. And Kannada, his philosophy, Jaimini. But this karma mimamsa philosophy is the philosophy that you work and you get the result. And that's it. So if you work nicely, you get nice result. And there's no need for any God. Their opinion is that even if there is a God, they put forward the argument that if anyone works nicely, the result is sure to come. Their opinion is even if there is a God who gives the result of his fruit of activities, there's no need to worship him because unless man works, he cannot bestow any good result. They say that instead of worshiping a demigod or God, people should give attention to their own duties, and thus the good result will surely come. Lord Krishna began to speak to his father according to these principles of karma mimamsa philosophy. My dear father, he said, I don't think you need to worship any demigod for the successful performance of your agricultural activities. Every living being is born according to his past karma and leaves this life taking the result of his present karma. Everyone is born in different types of species of life according to his past activities, and he gets his next birth according to the activities of this life. Different grades of material happiness and distress, comforts and disadvantages of life are different results of different kinds of activities from either the past or present life. See how intelligent Krishna is. Mars, Nanda, and other elder members argued that without satisfying the predominating God, one cannot derive any good result by material activities. This is actually the fact. For example, it is sometimes found that in spite of first-class medical help and treatment by a first-class physician, a diseased person dies. It is concluded, therefore, that first-class medical treatment or the attempts of a first-class physician are not in themselves the cause for curing a patient. There must be the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, a father and mother's taking care of their children is not the cause of children's comfort. Sometimes it's found that in spite of all care by the parents, the children go bad or succumb to death. Therefore, material activities are not sufficient for results. there must be the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nanda Maharaj therefore advocated that in order to get good results for agricultural activities, they must satisfy Indra, the superintending deity of the rain supply. Lord Krishna nullified this argument. First of all, Krishna says you just have to work and you get your karma. God can't give you any results anyway unless you work. So, not necessary to worship him. Just work and you get the results. Then Nanda Maharaj gave this example that ultimately there's a fifth factor in every action. The place, the work, the senses, the time, those things you can manipulate. But the fifth factor is super soul of Krishna, of God. You can organize a perfect time, perfect place. You can be perfectly ready with the senses, and it may be a very good work, but it may all fail. But what determines success? And now Krishna is countering that again. This is the nice kind of argument to have with your father. Lord Krishna nullified this argument, saying that the demigods give results only to persons who have executed their prescribed duties. The demigods cannot give any good results to the person who has not executed the prescribed duties. Therefore, demigods are dependent on the execution of devoted duties and are not absolute in awarding good results to anyone. So why should one care about them? My dear father, Lord Krishna said, there's no need to worship the demigod Indra. Everyone has to achieve the result of his own work. We can actually see that one becomes busy according to the natural tendency of his work, and according to that natural tendency, all living entities, either human beings or demigods, achieve their respective results. All living entities achieve either higher or lower bodies and create enemies, friends or neutral parties only because of their different kinds of work. One should be careful to discharge duties according to his natural instinct and not divert attention to the worship of various demigods. The demigods will be satisfied by proper execution of all duties, so there is no need to worship them. Let us rather perform our prescribed duties very nicely. Actually, one cannot be happy without executing his proper prescribed duty. One who does not, therefore, properly discharge his prescribed duties is compared to an unchaste wife. The proper prescribed duty of the brahmanas is the study of the Vedas. The proper duty of the royal order, the kshatriyas, is engagement in protecting the citizens. The proper duty of the Vaishya community is agriculture, trade, and protection of the cows. And the proper duty of the Shudras is service to the higher classes, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. We belong to the Vaishya community, and our proper duty is to farm, to trade with the agricultural produce, to protect cows, or to take to banking. Krishna identified himself with the Vaishya community because Nanda Maharaj was protecting many cows and Krishna was taking care of them. He enumerated four kinds of business engagements for the Vaishya community, namely agricultural trade, protection of cows, and banking. Although the Vaishyas can take to any of these occupations, the men of Vrindavan were engaged primarily in the protection of cows. Krishna further explained to his father, this cosmic manifestation is going on under the influence of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. These three modes are the causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction. The cloud is caused by the action of the mode of passion. Therefore, it is the mode of passion which causes the rainfall. And after the rainfall, the living entities derive the result, success in agricultural work. What then has Indra to do in this affair? Even if you do not please it, Indra, what can he do? We do not derive any special benefit from Indra. Even if he is there, he pours water on the ocean also, where there is no need of water. So he is pouring water on the ocean or on the land. It does not depend on our worshiping him. As far as we are concerned, we do not need to go to another city or village or foreign country. There are palatial buildings in the cities, but we are satisfied living in this forest of Vrindavan. Our specific relationship is with Govardhan Hill and Vrindavan Forest and nothing more. I therefore request you, my dear father, to begin a sacrifice which will satisfy the local Brahmanas and Govardhana Hill, and let us have nothing to do with Indra. After hearing this statement by Krishna, Nanda Maharaj replied, my dear boy, since you are asking, I shall arrange for a separate sacrifice for the local Brahmanas and Govardhan Hill. But for the present, let me execute this sacrifice known as Indra Yajna. But Krishna replied, my dear father, don't delay. The sacrifice you propose for Govardhan and the local Brahmanas will take much time. Better take the arrangement and paraphernalia you have already made for the Indra Yajna and immediately engage them to satisfy Govardhan Hill and the local Brahmanas. Maharaj Nanda finally relented. The coward men then inquired from Krishna how he wanted the yajna performed, and Krishna gave them the following directions. Prepare very nice foods of all descriptions from the grains and ghee collected for the yajna. Prepare rice, dal, then halava, pakora, puri, and all kinds of milk preparations such as sweet rice, rabadi, sweet balls, sandesh, rasgulla, and laddu. And invite the learned brahmanas who can chant the Vedic mantras and offer oblations to the fire. The brahmanas should be given all kinds of grains in charity. Then decorate all the cows and feed them well. After performing this, give money in charity to the brahmanas. As far as the lower animals are concerned, such as dog, and the lower grades of people, such as the chandalas, or the fifth class of men who are considered untouchable, they also may be given sumptuous prasadam. After nice grasses have been given to the cows, the sacrifice known as Govardhana Puja may immediately begin. This sacrifice will very much satisfy me. Do we ever bring cows into the temple in Govardhan Puja? We do in Bombay. Nice if we can get a little calf. Oh, there are so many farms around. Just go and ask a farmer if you can borrow his calf. It's a lot of fun. Of course, you have to make a place for the cow because they pass urine and stool all over the floor. Huh? You had a cow? Oh, you did?
The cow we had grew up.
Yeah. It's really fun. Anyway. Where are we? In this statement, Lord Krishna practically described the whole economy of the Vaishya community. In all communities in human society, including Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Chandalas, and in the animal kingdom, including the cows, dogs, goats, etc., everyone has his part to play. Each is to work in cooperation for the total benefit of all society, which includes not only animate objects, but also inanimate objects like hills and land. The Vaishya community is specifically responsible for the economic improvement of the society, producing grains, by giving protection to the cows, by transporting food when needed, and by banking and finance. So this, often you hear this, especially from illiterate Westerners like our parents, that this caste system is so bad, and it's people, it's just a way of bribe burning or something, you know. But this is a very nice statement. You can show them right in Prabhupada's books. It says right here, each is to work in cooperation for the total benefit of all society. Right there. From this statement we can learn that although the cats and dogs, which have now become so important, are not to be neglected, cow protection is actually more important than protection of cats and dogs. Another hint we get from this statement is that the chandalas, or the untouchables, are also not to be neglected by the higher classes and should be given necessary protection. Everyone is important, but some are directly responsible for the advancement of human society, and some are only indirectly responsible. However, when Krishna consciousness is there, everyone's total benefit is taken care of. The sacrifice known as Govardhan Puja is observed in Krishna conscious movement. Lord Chaitanya has recommended that since Krishna is worshipful, so is land, Vrindavan, Govardhan Hill is also worshipable. To confirm this statement, Lord Krishna said that Govardhan Puja is as good as worship of Him. From that day, Govardhan Puja has been going on and is known as Annakuta. Annakuta. Anna means grains. Kuta means, I'm not sure what it means. Kuta. Distribution. Offering. In all the temples of Vrindavan or outside of Vrindavan, huge quantities of food are prepared in this ceremony and are very sumptuously distributed to the general population. Sometimes the food is thrown to the crowds and they enjoy collecting it off the ground. From this we can understand that prasadam offered to Krishna never becomes polluted or contaminated, even if it is thrown on the ground. The people therefore collect it and eat with great satisfaction. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna therefore advised the coward men to stop the Indra Yajna and begin the Govardhan Puja in order to chastise Indra, who is very much puffed up at being the supreme controller of the heavenly planets. The honest and simple coward men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, accepted Krishna's proposal and executed in detail everything he advised. They performed Govardhan Puja and circumambulation of the hill. Following the inauguration of Govardhan Puja, people in Vrindavan still dressed nicely and assembled near Govardhan Hill to offer worship and circumambulate the hill, leading their cows all around. According to the instruction of Lord Krishna, Nanda Maharaj and the coward men called in learned brahmanas and began to worship Govardhan Hill by chanting Vedic hymns and offering prasadam. The inhabitants of Vrindavan assembled together, decorated their cows, and gave them grass. Keeping cows in front, they began to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. The gopis dressed themselves very luxuriantly and sat in bull-driven carts, chanting the glories of Krishna's pastimes. Assembled there to act as priests for Govardhan Puja, the brahmanas offered their blessings to the coward men and their wives, the gopis. While everything was complete, Krishna assumed a great transcendental form and declared to the inhabitants of Vrindavan that he was himself Govardhan Hill, in order to convince the devotees that Govardhan Hill and Krishna himself are identical. Then Krishna began to eat all the food offered there. The identity of Krishna and Govardhan Hill is still honored, and great devotees take rocks from Govardhan Hill and worship them exactly as they worship the deity of Krishna in the temples. The followers of the Krishna conscious movement may therefore collect small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home, because this worship is as good as deity worship. The form of Krishna who began to eat the offerings was separately constituted, and Krishna himself, along with the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, offered obeisances to the deity as well as Govardhan Hill. In offering obeisances to the huge form of Krishna and Govardhan Hill, Krishna declared, "Just see how Govardhan Hill has assumed this huge form and is favoring us by accepting all the offerings." Krishna also declared at that meeting, "One who neglects the worship of Govardhan Puja, as I am personally conducting it, will not be happy. There are many snakes on Govardhan Hill, and persons neglecting the prescribed duty of Govardhan Puja will be bitten by these snakes and killed. In order to assure the good fortune of the cows and themselves, all people of Vrindavan near Govardhan must worship the hill as prescribed by me." Thus, performing the Govardhan Puja sacrifice, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan followed the instructions of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and afterwards they returned to their respective homes. You have a Govardhan Shiva, right? Big one? Oh, okay. Medium size. The biggest one I've seen, well, there's two. There's one in Houston, and there's one in Hungary. Okay, the next part is the... Huh? Oh, you have a big one in mind for you? I don't remember. Yeah, I guess that's right. Next part is the devastating rainfall in Vrindavan, but I'd like to also read from the Govardhanasa Prarthana Dasaka and Sri Govardhan Ashray Dasaka from Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, which were favorites of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This is translations by Kusha Kratta. 10 appeals for residence at Govardhan Hill. O Govardhan, O King of all incomparable great mountains, O hill that became an umbrella with the arm of your own Lord as the handle, and then destroyed the pride of the Deva King, madly attacking with raised weapons, please grant the residents near you that is so dear to me. O Govardhan, please grant to me the residence near you that will guarantee the sight of the youthful divine couple as they enjoy passionate, amorous pastimes in your caves. It's a fact, Radha and Krishna would often come from Vrindavan to Govardhan, and there were caves there where they would have their pastimes because they would be concealed from the eyes of unqualified persons. O Govardhan, O hill where Krishna happily plays with Balaram and his friends in the incomparable jeweled courtyards, jeweled lion thrones, trees, waterfalls, mountain brooks, caves, peaks, and valleys. Please grant the residents near you that is so dear to me. O Govardhan, O hill that provides the dark courtyard that witnesses the Dana Keli pastime of the nectar treasure youthful divine couple. O hill that brings great bliss to the best of they who relish transcendental nectar. Please grant to me residence near you. What is the Dana Keli pastime? Anyone know? Yeah, Krishna acts as the toll man, and Radharani and the gopis come. You must give me all your clothes or something. Naughty boy. O Govardhan, O hill that hiding, O hill that, hiding as you playfully embrace the neck of your dear friend, Lord Hari's dear unprecedented Radha Kunda, secretly gazes at the pastimes of the youthful divine couple. Please grant to me residence near you. O Govardhan, O hill that by nourishing the cows with its water, grass, and the shade of its trees declares to the three worlds the appropriateness of its own name, please grant to me residence near you. Note, Govardhan means, Govardhana means that which nourishes the cows. Go, cows, Vardhana, which worship, which nourishes. O Govardhan, O hill that the enemy of Agha and Baka honored by transforming into a new house to give Braja protection from the sustained fury of the Sura king, please grant to me residence near you. Transforming into a new house to give Braja protection. O Govardhan, O King of Mountains, O hill whose name, the best of Lord Hari's servants, flows from the moon of Sri Radha's mouth. O hill that the Vedas declared to be the tilak, marking of Braja, please grant to me residence near you. So, I was chanting the names of Govardhan. O hill that the Vedas declare to be tilak marking on Braja. Interesting. In Croatia, wherever you go in Croatia, have any of you ever been to Croatia? You been there? No?
No, I was very much
there. Oh.
Okay. I have.
Yeah? If you walk anywhere in Croatia, it's an older, it's a European culture, and especially the older generation have some traditional values. If someone wishes you good day, they will always respond, they will always reply back. It's not like here, if you say good morning, you walk right by. But it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're a devotee, you walk by and say good day. And in Croatian language, in Serbo-Croatian language, the word for good day is Govardhan. So I always say Govardhan, and they say Govardhan. You try it next time you're in Croatia, or if you meet a Croatian, say Govardhan. And they'll say Dobrodan. Get them to chant Krishna's name. Although I am a cheater and a criminal, unlimitedly merciful Lord Satchidananda, who is very dear to you, has given me to you. O Govardhan, please do not consider whether I am acceptable or not, but simply grant me residence near you. One who carefully reads these 10 nectar verses describing Srila Govardhan, the king of the mountains, will very soon reside near that blissful hill and quickly attain the precious jewel of service to the handsome divine couple. When Indra understood that the sacrifice that was to be offered by the cowherd men in Vrindavan had been stopped by Krishna, he became angry, and he vented his anger upon the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who were headed by Nanda Maharaj, although Indra knew perfectly well that Krishna was personally protecting them. As the director of different kinds of clouds called, Indra called for Samvartaka. This cloud is invited when there is need to devastate the whole cosmic manifestation. So at the end of a cycle, there is pralaya, or cosmic devastation. All the lower planetary systems are flooded and completely inundated. So that flooding is achieved by the Samvartaka cloud, very powerful cloud system, and not just one cloud, of course. He has his helpers, but the whole lower portion of the universe is completely flooded. So now Indra is calling the same cloud just to Vrindavan, to one little village. The Samvartaka was ordered by Indra to go over Vrindavan and inundate the whole area with an extensive flood. Demoniacally, Indra thought himself to be all-powerful Supreme Personality. When demons become very powerful, they defy the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. Indra, though not a demon, was puffed up by his material position and he wanted to challenge the Supreme Controller. He thought himself, at least for the time being, as being as powerful as Krishna. Indra said, "Just see the impudence of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They are simply inhabitants of the forest, but being infatuated with their friend Krishna, who is nothing but an ordinary human being, they have dared to defy the demigods." So, yeah, very puffed up. Krishna is known as Asamordva. Asama, not Osama, Asama. There's nobody equal to him, Sama. Or Urdhva, there's nobody higher than Krishna. Ekale, Ishwar, Krishna, Arsavritya. But Indra's thinking that he's equal to Krishna. Krishna has declared in the Bhagavad Gita that the worshippers of the demigods are not very intelligent. He's also declared that one who has to give up all kinds of worship and concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Krishna's invoking the anger of Indra and later on chastising him is a clear indication to his devotees that those who are engaged in Krishna consciousness have no need to worship any demigod, even if it is found that the demigod has become angry. Krishna gives his devotees all protection and they should completely depend on his mercy. Indra cursed the action of the inhabitants of Vrindavan and said, "By defying the authority of the demigods, the inhabitants of Vrindavan will suffer in material existence. Having neglected the sacrifice to the demigods, they cannot cross over the impediments of the ocean of material existence." Indra further declared, "These coward men in Vrindavan have neglected my authority on the advice of this talkative boy, who is known as Krishna. He is nothing but a child. And by believing this child, they have enraged me." Thus he ordered the Samvartaka cloud to go and destroy the prosperity of Vrindavan. "The men of Vrindavan," said Indra, "have become too puffed up over their material opulence and are overconfident due to the presence of their tiny friend, Krishna. He is simply talkative, childish, and unaware of the cosmic complete situation. Although he is thinking himself very advanced in knowledge, because they have taken Krishna so seriously, they must be punished. They should be destroyed with their cows." In this way, Indra ordered the Samvartaka cloud to go to Vrindavan and inundate the place. It is indicated here that in the villages or outside the towns, the inhabitants must depend on the cows for their prosperity. When the cows are destroyed, the people are destitute of all kinds of opulences. When King Indra ordered the Samvartaka and companion clouds to go to Vrindavan, the clouds were afraid of doing this mischief. But King Indra assured them, "You go ahead and I will also go riding on my elephant, accompanied by great storms, and I shall apply all my strength to punishing the inhabitants of Vrindavan." It's interesting, people always criticize the Indians, especially in the last decade and before. There are so many people starving in India. They should just kill their cows and eat their cows. Why they worship their sacred cows is all nonsense. The Canadian government actually did a study, and this was revealed in a video. I believe it's available with ITV, where they came to understand after studying the economy of India that India would be crazy to kill their cows. First of all, their Cebu cows are not Guernsey or Jersey or big fat cows. And the cows and the bulls are the very basis of the economy. The richest province, the richest state in India is Punjab, and it's basically agrarian. The first Indians to come to North America were Sikhs, and they're all farmers, all up and down California and BC. All the big farming down here in Vancouver, at least in the past, was where these Sikh farmers cornered the market on vegetables and every other. Now the Chinese are into it, but not before that. Huh? So, anyway, cow and the bull, very important. But Indra is ordering, kill the cows, because he knows that'll destroy the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Ordered by King Indra, all the dangerous clouds appeared above Vrindavan and began to pour water incessantly with all their strength and power. There was constant lightning and thunder, blowing of severe wind and incessant falling of rain. The rainfall seemed to fall like piercing sharp arrows. By pouring water as thick as pillars without cessation, the clouds gradually filled all the lands in Vrindavan with water, and there was no visible distinction between higher and lower land. The situation was very dangerous, especially for the animals. The rainfall was accompanied by great winds, and every living creature in Vrindavan began to tremble from the severe cold. Unable to find any other source of deliverance, they all approached. No. Govinda! to take shelter at his lotus feet. The cows, especially, being much aggrieved from the heavy rain, bowed down their heads, and taking their calves underneath their bodies, they approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead to take shelter of his lotus feet. At that time, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to pray to Lord Krishna. Dear Krishna, they prayed, you are all-powerful, and you are very affectionate to your devotees. Now, please protect us, who have been much harassed by angry Indra. Upon hearing this prayer, Krishna could also understand that Indra, being bereft of his sacrificial honor, was pouring down rain that was accompanied by heavy pieces of ice and strong winds, although all this was out of season. Krishna understood that this was a deliberate exhibition of anger by Indra. He therefore concluded, this demigod who thinks himself supreme has shown his great power, but I shall answer him according to my position, and I shall teach him that he is not autonomous in managing universal affairs. I am the supreme lord over all, and I shall thus take away his false prestige which has risen from his power. The demigods are my devotees, and therefore it is not possible for them to forget my supremacy. But somehow or other, he has become puffed up with material power, and thus is now maddened. I shall act in such a way to relieve him of this false prestige. So there are different kinds of demigods. Actually, there's only two kinds of living beings, Sura and Asura. So all of you are becoming demigods. But we have to always be careful. There's always a tendency, if we don't control our minds and senses in worship of Krishna, that we will forget our position, become falsely puffed up, and then we will be subject to Krishna's anger. What'd you say, Marv? Okay, Marv says Hare Krishna, good comment. I shall give protection to my pure devotees in Vrindavan who are present completely at my mercy and whom I have completely taken under my protection. I must save them by my mystic power. Thinking in this way, Lord Krishna immediately picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand, exactly as a child picks up a mushroom from the ground. Thus he exhibited his transcendental pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. Giridhar Govardhan Ki. Lord Krishna then addressed his devotees. My dear brothers, my dear father, my dear inhabitants of Vrindavan, you can now safely enter under the umbrella of Govardhan Hill, which I have just lifted. Do not be afraid of the hill and think it will fall from my hand. You have been too much afflicted from the heavy rain and strong wind, therefore I have lifted this hill, which will protect you exactly like a huge umbrella. I think this is a proper arrangement to relieve you of your immediate distress. Be happy along with your animals underneath this great umbrella. Being assured by Lord Krishna, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan entered beneath the great hill along with their property and animals. They all appeared to be safe. The inhabitants of Vrindavan and their animals remained there for 1 week without being disturbed by hunger, thirst, or any other discomforts. They were simply astonished to see how Krishna was holding up the mountain with the little finger of his left hand. Seeing the extraordinary mystic power of Krishna, Indra, the king of heaven, was thunderstruck and baffled by his determination. He immediately called for all the clouds and asked them to desist. When the sky became completely cleared of all clouds and there was sunrise again, the strong wind stopped. At that time, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known now as the lifter of Govardhan Hill, said, "My dear cowherd men, you can leave and take your wives, children, cows, and valuables, because everything is ended. The inundation has gone down along with the swelling waters of the river." All the men loaded their valuables on carts and slowly left with their cows and other paraphernalia. After they had cleared out everything, Lord Krishna very slowly replaced Govardhan Hill exactly in the same position as it had been before. When everything was done, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan approached Krishna with feelings of love and embraced him with great ecstasy. The gopis, being naturally very affectionate to Krishna, began to offer him yogurt mixed with their tears, and they poured incessant blessings upon him. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda, and Balaram, who is the strongest of the strong, embraced Krishna one after another, and from spontaneous feelings of affection, blessed him over and over again. In the heavens, different demigods from different planetary systems, such as Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, and Charnaloka, also began to show their complete satisfaction. They poured showers of flowers on the surface of the earth and sounded different conch shells. There was beating of drums and being inspired by godly feelings, residents of Gandharvaloka began to play on their tamburas to please the Lord. After this incident, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrounded by his dear friends and the animals, returned to his home. As usual, the gopis began to chant the glorious pastimes of Lord Krishna with great feeling, for they were chanting from the heart. There's a nice story. I thought it was mentioned here, but it's not. While Krishna was lifting Govardhan Hill in that 7-day period, there was rain. And the gopis, along with everyone else, became quite wet. And their clothing began to, it became tight against their bodies, and of course, around their breasts, it became loose. Yes, in the nectar devotion is there. And the kumkum from their hair also mixed, and so it created a very kind of attractive scene for Krishna's mind, and he was meditating on the breasts of the gopis, raised breasts of the gopis, decorated with kumkum, and he began to shudder. He became very, attracted. And as he was lifting the hill, he was shuddering. So the mountain began to shake. And then all the residents of Vrindavan, they became very worried that maybe Krishna's getting tired. He can't continue to lift the hill anymore. But Balaram, seeing Krishna shuddering, began to smile because he knew the mind of Krishna. And when Krishna saw Balaram smiling, he blushed red because Balaram knew what he was thinking. This is continuing from... Well, he was also, he was also, he knew Krishna's mind. Yeah. Sri Govardhan Ashraya Dasaka, 10 appeals for shelter at Govardhan Hill. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, the best of mountains, the friend of Gokula, the charming bumblebee, that for 7 days stood on the graceful whirl of the lotus flower of the Lord, of Lord Krishna's hand. So there was this, charming bumblebee, who was always buzzing around. It's the king bee, buzzing around Krishna's lotus garlands. So Govardhan is his friend. The flower of Lord Krishna's hand and protected Braja from the mouth of the Indra crocodile raining a great monsoon. What pious person will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, whose peak is the place of the pastimes for Lord Krishna, the master of the Surabhi cows, and near which is blissful Govinda Kund, where a Surabhi cow, followed by a humbled Indra bearing the waters of the celestial Ganges, bathed Lord Krishna and secretly crowned him king of the Surabhi cows. So Indra came and, of course, apologized to Krishna and served Krishna, and at Govinda Kund, he came there and bathed Lord Krishna and worshipped him. What pious person would not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, which is glorified by the great sages, which is encircled by the lakes Sri Kunda, Brahma Kunda, Hara Kunda, Apsara Kunda, Priya Kunda, Sri Dana Kunda, which are splendid with the happiness of pure love and more dear to Lord Hari than the celestial Ganges and a host of other sacred places. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, which is charming with cows, deer, birds, and trees, and which is the place where the lakes Jyotsnyam, it's not in transliteration or in Sanskrit. It's like the misgar, the garbled mix-up. It's hard to translate. Harakun Sumanakun Gorlukun Bal Aridvajakun Govardhankun. Many other lakes, many swiftly moving mountain streams, many lion thrones for amorous pastimes, many places for Lord Hari's other pastimes, and the cowherd boy, Lord himself, are all splendidly manifest. So, again, when we go to Vrindavan, Prabhupada said you can't go to Vrindavan by traveling 90 miles south of Delhi. Your mind, your heart has to be imbued with love. You actually, if and when you go to Vrindavan after you leave Delhi, or even after you leave Vancouver, you should start preparing your mind to see, to worship Krishna, because there's Boma Vrindavan and there is Gokula. There's the external Vrindavan with all the dirt and the filth, and you know, it's not so bad, but to a Westerner it's certainly a little difficult to understand. But for one whose eyes premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santasadaiva hridayeshu vilokayana, he can see the real Vrindavan whose eyes are anointed with the salve of love. So all of these things, Govardhan is the place where Krishna used to go, and now it's there. Govardhan is actually sinking the hill. It was much higher 5,000 years ago. But it was very verdant. There were so many grasses and trees and birds, and even today you will find it's relatively green, and there's all kinds of peacocks and other wonderful residents there. Lots of cows in Govardhan. But there were all kinds of thrones all over. It was like a theme park. You know, in a theme park, different aspects you find in different places. If you go to Disney World, go on one of their boat tours, that it's all artificial, but everywhere there's different things happening. So this was in Govardhan, it was like that, or it is like that for those who can see. So many places where Radha and Krishna are enjoying and different pastimes are going on. If you prepare your mind, you never can tell what Krishna will reveal to you. Devotees who live there, and we have a nice place just opposite Govardhan, a beautiful place that was purchased by Giriraj Swami and Tamal Krishna Goswami, donated to ISKCON. Keshavarti Prabhu is there. But they see things, wonderful things happening. Very magical place. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill? He who, with always devoted, carries on his bowed head the lake known as Shyamakund, which is millions of times greater than the Ganges, and which was born from the foot of Lord Krishna, becomes more dear to the Lord than even the demigod Shiva. He who in the same way carries the jewel known as Radha Kunda attains the full mercy of Lord Krishna. He becomes the most dear and glorious of devotees. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, where the divine couple enjoy their rescue, rescue fee pastimes. Rescue fee, that's the Dana Kali Lila. And where the Manasa Ganga flows. In the Manasa Ganga, the pilot Madhava took sweetly beautiful Radha on his boat When she, frightened by a great storm, prayed that he calm it, he claimed from her as a rescue fee the fulfillment of his amorous pastimes. His amorous desires. There's a beautiful painting of the gopis in a boat, you know, a long boat, and all the gopis are there playing their tempura, this and that. Krishna's guiding the boat. Ah, what pious person will not take shelter of lofty Govardhan Hill, the beautiful and transcendental place of the Rasa dance, where Sri Radha, accompanied by her beautiful friends, worshipped by hundreds of goddesses of fortune, and the splendid nectar arm of Lord Krishna playfully resting on her neck, dances in the springtime Rasa Lila. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, where, blossoming with happiness at the outrageous, joking words of their friends, perpetually wounded by the swift arrows shot from the corners of their cruel, smiling eyes, and laughing at the crooked words of the ever-new Dana Kali quarrel, the youthful divine couple displayed so many transcendental pastimes. These verses have to be meditated upon because they're big, long sentences. Who will not take shelter of graceful and auspicious Govardhan Hill, where, accompanied by Sri Dama and his other friends, playing with Sri Sag, and carefully herding the cows, Lord Krishna happily sings, and where Lord Krishna enjoys amorous pastimes with Radha in the Rasa dance arena and deep in the hidden caves. Who will not take shelter of Govardhan Hill, the crowned king of all mountains? For the people of Braj's sake, Lord Mukunda neglected the sun god's daughter, Yamuna, a host of other lofty hills, the wish-fulfilling forest of Vrindavan, and the town of Nandiswar, and respectfully worshipped Govardhan Hill. By the mercy of Govardhan Hill, these 10 beautiful verses about Govardhan Hill, which grant residence of Govardhan Hill, have come from the mouth of a blind old man. Anyone know who that blind old man was? Raghunath Das, as he said. The pleasure of Govardhan Hill, which is my life and soul, which is a beautiful jewel mine of transcendental virtues, is the ripe fruit I seek from my labor in writing these verses. This is the chapter 3 of Vraja Riddhi Chintamani. Govardhan Hill is like a flag of intense sweetness placed in the opulent land of Vrindavan. As the king of mountains, Govardhan Hill offers very pleasing royal service to the young prince of Vraja. The rocks of Govardhan Hill are many kinds of splendid jewels that provide thrones, couches, and other kinds of furniture for Sri Krishna, the supreme monarch of all nectar mellows. Govardhan Hill's beautiful forests and caves are Krishna's nectar pastime palaces, each one perfect for the supreme good fortune of his beloved and her friends. Govardhan Hill's trees and vines serve Sri Krishna by offering him blossoming branches with sweet fruits and flowers filled with honey, nectar, and fragrant pollen. The red, vermilion, yellow, and other colored pigments of Govardhan Hill decorate Lord Krishna's transcendental body for the pleasure of his beloved gopis. Actually, the soil in Govardhan, it's a fact, there's red soil, yellow soil, different colors. The musk left by deer, as well as the kumkum, camphor, and aguru, naturally produced by Govardhan Hill, were all used to give a sweet fragrance to the transcendental body of Lord Krishna. There is a pleasant grove of sandalwood trees on Govardhan Hill. Although snakes generally flock to sandalwood trees, no snakes ever come here, Or if sometimes a snake may come, it is not poisonous. Or if sometimes a poisonous snake may come, its poison is automatically counteracted that it can do no harm. As the best servant of Lord Hari, Govardhan Hill has made this wonderful arrangement for Lord Krishna's pleasure. One time, a contrary, fawn-eyed gopi left Sri Krishna. A short time afterwards, she saw a snake on the road. Frightened, she took shelter of Lord Krishna, embracing him and begging for protection. As Lord Hari's best servant, Govardhan Hill, made all these nectarine arrangements for his pastimes. Note, this verse may also be translated in the following way. Rejected by a certain contrary fawn-eyed gopi. What does that mean, fawn-eyed? I mean, a fawn is a deer. Deer's eye. What a deer? Oh, big. Oh, okay, big eyes. Fawn-eyed gopi. Okay. Sri Krishna said, I have just been bitten by one of Govardhan Hill's snakes. When the gopi heard this, she became repentant and came before the Lord with many apologies. As Lord Hari's best servant, Govardhan Hill made all these arrangements for his pastimes. The rocks of Govardhan Hill are all precious gems. Some are sapphires, some emeralds, some rubies or crystals. They provide the perfect backdrop for Lord Krishna's pastimes. If, while walking on Govardhan Hill, Krishna's elder brother Balaram sees a series of golden stones, he thinks, the daughter of King Brijabhanu must have just now walked before me. And he changes course to avoid an awkward situation. In the same way, if she sees a series of crystal stones, she thinks, Balaram must have just now walked before me. And she changes her course. If on Govardhan Hill, well, I mean, that means that Balaram respects that Radharani has a destiny to meet with Krishna on Govardhan, so he doesn't want to interfere with that. Although Balaram did engage in Rasa Leela, but he had his own set of gopis. I wonder if that's where the word groupie came from. Anyway. The gopis' necklaces, ornaments, red foot cosmetics, betel nuts, and other paraphernalia gaze on the beauty of Govardhan Hill's groves and caves. Who would not become enchanted by the beauty of Govardhan Hill? Sri Krishna is the sapphire, and the gopis the golden necklaces ornamenting Govardhan Hill. The pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are the sons and daughters of Govardhan Hill. Who is able to describe the glories of Govardhan Hill? The peacocks dance enthusiastically. The bees and cuckoos sing melodiously, and many other birds chirp a rhythmic accompaniment as they all gaze on and serve Lord Hari, Govardhan Hill, the best of Lord Hari's servants. The land around Govardhan Hill in all directions is filled with many lakes, groves, and other charming places of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Many lovely streams flow from Govardhan Hill onto these lands in all directions. To the east is Dana Nivaratna Kunda. When Sri Radhika's handsome beloved remembers it, he begins to tremble and the hairs on his body stand erect. To the east of that is Chandra Sarovara, where the divine couple enjoyed many rasa dances. The memory of this place makes them dance in ecstatic love. Southeast of Govardhan Hill is Sankarshan Ananda Sarovara. And to the east is of that is Gauri Tirtha, which is scrupulously avoided by Gauri's husband, Lord Shiva. The nectar flood of supreme good fortune rising from his eternal pastimes with her has made her beloved supremely, has made her beloved supremely learned in the philosophy of forest pastimes. In between Sankarshan Sarovara and Dana Nivaratna Kunda is Anandaraja Tirtha, where the Mahanta Kuta festival delighted the young prince of Braja. West of that are two splendid places in the mouth of Krishna's pastimes. They are Sri Dhana Ghat and Sri Sumani Ghat, where the divine couple playfully talked and joked. At this place, the divine couple enjoyed the playful quarrel pastimes known as Dana Keli. Who could not be astonished by this pastime? When this pastime enters the ears, it makes both the body and mind dance. Govardhan Hill resembles a giant peacock that has Govinda Kund at its tail. The Manasa Ganga, where the divine couple eternally enjoys boat sailing pastimes, enter into the waters of Govinda Kund. If one hears about the divine couple's boat sailing pastimes, he will become stunned in ecstasy, and it will not be possible for him to stop hearing about them. In Vrindavan they do this. They fill up the courtyard and they have a boat. Very nice pastime. On the Manasa Ganga shores are many Madhavi vine pavilions where nectar, with nectar beauty that shines in the three worlds. There the divine couple enjoys splendid pastimes that are eternally remembered in the world's hearts. With its nearby forest groves and the limitless nectar trickling flowers in its water, Kusum Sarovara shines with great splendor. Is it the handsome face of Govardhan Hill, the king of mountains? This lake is known as Kusum Sarovara because of many blossoming flowers destined to become gopis in the future that grow in its waters. Simply by one bathing in this Kusum Sarovara, Narad Muni attained a gopi form. This fact is directly confirmed in the words of the enchanting Supreme Personality of Godhead. Has anyone bathed in Kusum Sarovara? No?
I did.
I did. My boy, did you ever bathe in Kusum Sarovara? Huh? And what's nice is the Braja Mandal Parikrama. They visit all these places. And there's a nice map of Govardhan which shows the mouth, the arms, the legs, you know, and all these holy places are situated on them. So you get a nice idea. Shyamakunda and Radhakunda are two great floods of nectar, of beauty. They are two great oceans of splendor. They are two beautiful roots from which sweet devotional service grows. They are two jewel mines of love. They are two seeds from which grow the jewel vines of transcendental pastimes. How did they become two splendid and nectar-sweet lakes? By seeing these two lakes, Radha and Krishna believe they are present in them. It is as if they directly see each other there. The wise say that by approaching these lakes, one directly approaches Radha and Krishna. Longing to meet, but forced to remain separate, Radha and Krishna assumed the forms of Radha Kunda and Shyama Kunda. In this way, they became splashed with nectar of meeting each other. I think that when Radha saw Krishna, she melted with ecstasy and thus assumed the liquid state of the waters of Radha Kunda. And in the same way, when Krishna saw Radha, he also melted in ecstasy and came the waters of Shyamakunda. In this way, these two lakes bear the names of the qualities of the divine couple. Out of great kindness to the people, so they could directly taste their sweetness, Radha and Krishna have become these two lakes. shining with happiness, the devotees bathe in these two lakes. I think these two lakes are the divine couple's love. They who are fortunate bathe there, because bathing there is like bathing in their transcendental love. These two lakes bear the names of their divine couple. Radha Kunda, Shama Kunda, Giri Govardhana. Jai Giriraj Maharaj. Well, does anybody have anything else they'd like to add? Huh?
When they were lifting, when Krishna was lifting Govardhan, the inhabitants of Vrindavan had umbrellas and they were sticking them up, or sort of canes.
Canes, they had canes. I think they had umbrellas.
They didn't have umbrellas. And they were thinking that they were also.
Yeah, they were assisting the little boy. There's a deity. It's actually our deity, our Sampradaya, but he was handed over to the Balava Sampradaya, known as Nathji, Sri Nathji, and that is a beautiful deity of Krishna. His finger, he's like this. You've probably seen jet black, and made of black stone. Got his finger, little finger up like that. Lifting Govardhan.
The one Krishna was shivering.
He said that when he was shaking, and you know, due to seeing the gopis, Mother Yashoda became very worried. So Krishna saw that he was frightening his mother, and apparently before that he was holding Govardhan with his full hand, but when he saw that his mother was worried, he said, "Don't worry, mother. See, I can lift it with my little finger. Piece of cake."
Also, when Krishna shook the hill, the residents of Vrindavan thought they would drop it. So they got out of hand, had sticks, and they all dropped the hill.
Yeah.
And Mother Yashoda seen that, she thought that actually Krishna would possibly lift himself onto another one. And when Krishna saw that all the Gauravans were all poking the whole thing, then he thought he could take a little rest.
Position. I wish Krishna lifted the hill so that it would balance perfectly on his finger.